This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Podcast Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution hit double-digit losses on the 2024 season, falling 1-0 at home to New York City FC. Injuries continued to plague this team, with Tomas Sankalai exiting early in the first half, and New England failed to score a goal for the fifth time this year. The Revs are firmly entrenched in last place, so not great. I'm your host, Andy Judd, and I'm here today to talk all about all of that with Tom Pinzone of the Blazing Musket. Tom, how's it going? I heard there's some racing today to also pay attention.
Well, I'm really hoping for some good sporting event to occur this weekend. The Revs game last night obviously was not that. The Monaco Grand Prix, the race is basically qualifying, which was yesterday. There's about 30 laps to go right now, and the biggest talking point is basically cars going slow on purpose to try and back up the cars behind them. That's where the Monaco Grand Prix is at right now. Cars going slow in a motor race to try and back. It's no one has passed each other. It's 40 laps in, and no one has passed another car in a race. So that is not going so well. So all my hope now is we are about an hour and a half away from drivers start your engines and the Indy 500, which is an oval race. And I'm not really a big fan of oval races because they're just going to turn left 1,000 times, but that's all I've got left. The Revs have let me down. The Monaco Grand Prix has been a letdown, and that's all I have. I have a bunch of cars turning left 1,000 times to save the weekend.
Well, hopefully those cars can turn left just the right amount for you, Tom. That's what I'm playing for. So we'll talk about soccer here for the rest of the podcast, because that was mostly gibberish to me. But before we do it, I do want to jump into our sponsor, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. All right. With that, Tom, let's get into our key takeaways. Key takeaways are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and their website, AnyRebellion.org. All right. So, Tom, we'll start with you. What's your key takeaway from this match?
You know, there was moments here and there, you know, of attacking play and build up that, you know, Porter actually, you know, very rare that I say this, but Porter said that you know, it's just kind of a shame that they're kind of showing signs of life 13 games in, and I actually agree. If this was the third game of the season, maybe not the 13th, you know, there's little elements here and there of successful build-up play, I mean, still very, very few and far between. Like Seth Maycomber of the Blazing Musket, you know, he clipped up three different plays in which they built the ball up really well. But I think the issue is that, you know, Seth is highlighting three of possibly three moments in the game. You know, it's not like, hey, look, these are the three best examples of many. It's like, this is the three times it worked in a 90-minute game at home, in which once again, they had the ball more than their opponent. There was a lot of just going long from the back. And, you know, we know that Porter will claim that that's part of the plan if it's successful. But what it looks like to me is, you know, there's really three reasons why you play a long ball. One is you're under pressure and you clear it. Two is you run out of ideas, so you just hit it long and hope. And the third is, you know, you actually see a situation downfield that you're trying to take advantage of with a long pass. I think one pass out of the many balls out of the back was the third, and the rest of them were the second. Just you run out of ideas, you've stalled out, you've tried to play up the side for the upteenth time, it's not gone anywhere, so nah, I'll just put my foot through it. So yeah, little hints of effective attacking play, but you know, we're 13 games into this season and that's all we have to cling to. And then of course, you know, a lot of focus on the end result of the limited build-up play success that they've had. You know, the end result in terms of the chances that they're creating, you know, they're not really creating quality chances. I mean, they had six shots on target, and I think three of those six were, you know, under hit straight into the keeper. No, I mean, it's just, yeah, there's a little bit that you could be encouraged about if this wasn't the 13th game of the season. And I actually, it's funny, I know that I hadn't actually put their win-loss record together until you mentioned it, that they've already lost 10 games this season. I actually hadn't dawned on me until you said it. So
yep,
thank you for thank you for piling on.
We finally did it. I was worried we weren't going to get there. It took us 13 games to get 10 losses. So,
God.
Yeah, so that's all. I mean, I think I agree with all of those points. It certainly does seem like a better performance this week. But, you know, this is the kind of performance that would have been encouraging 10 weeks ago or 12 weeks ago. But, you know, it's too late now with the guys you have to just be getting the basics of the system kind of going. You know, mm-hmm. I say that with, you know, we're 13 games in the season. That's not all the Caleb Porter's had time to do, right? He's also played a bunch of games in Champions Cup, so he's had time to instill those values there. He played, you know, preseason games, you know, so there's probably a good 20-ish games here where Porter's had an opportunity to get the team practicing this tactical vision of his and kind of see it and make adjustments to it as the players are on the field. So that we're this far into the season and we're just, you know, we have a few brief glimpses of anything that resembles, you know, kind of a cohesive strategy is kind of disheartening. And it kind of meshes into my key takeaway. And my key takeaway is just that, you know, with this team, it's not good enough, right? The fact that this was our best game of the season, maybe not the best game of the season, but certainly up there in terms of the quality on the ball. And that Caleb Porter's tactical system seems to have been implemented more faithfully to his idea. And the end result here is a 1-0 home loss against a good team, mind you. But like this, I mean, I think Caleb Porter said it in his post-game press conference, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but I think he said something along the lines of this is more what he was trying to do. And so if we take him at his word, if this is what he's trying to do, and it's still a 1-0 loss, 13 games in the season, that can't be a great sign, you know, and I'm wondering what we need to do, like what changes are possibly going to happen outside of completely changing the personnel. That's going to change that 1-0 loss where things seem to be tracking with Caleb Porter's system. What's going to change that into a win? And I just don't see what it is as of right now.
No, If you think back actually to the home game against Toronto, that was their best game of the season by a mile. They were banging on the door for almost the entirety of that game. I mean, they really, that was the one game you could say that they really had control of, in the way that Porter says that they want to have control of games. Now, part of that was Herdman outsmarting Porter for the first of two times in you know, short succession, in allowing the Revs to have the ball. Like, they weren't pressing them. You know, so that's another thing too. Like, his style seems to work a little bit better when the other team doesn't really try and stop them from doing it. When they get pressed high up the field consistently, you know, the whole thing just kind of falls apart. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the expected goals was 0.78 from 16 shots, six of which were on target in a home game. And he's trying to claim that as progress. I mean, that's pretty deflating. That this is steps in the right direction, and they kind of look like maybe they were going to score. Like, I mean, yeah,
everything came together, and they almost generated a full expected goal. I'm pretty sure, I don't actually have that up in front of me. Maybe I can take a look and find it, but I'm fairly certain that they generated somewhere in the, you know, 0.69, 0.75 region expected goals, not including on target. So just purely from the positions that they are shooting the ball from. They took 16 shots in this game. So Caleb Porter's system, if it's being, you know, if we were to take him at his word that it was more faithfully adhered to here, generated less than one expected goal from 16 tries. So if that's what we're headed towards, are we going to be able to defend any team in the league well enough to not let them score a goal? Because theoretically, based on stats, if you're not scoring, or if you're not getting one expected goal worth of chances, the math says you're not scoring a goal in those games. Or maybe, you know, 60% of the time you're getting a goal. So, you know, that seems to be the key issue right now, is that even if the system is working as intended, and I'm not sure that it's fully there yet, but even if it's working as intended, is it going to be enough offensive output to offset, you know, the Revs' fairly clear lack of defensive solidity?
Yeah, because I mean, the XG, I mean, MLS, you know, they do their own research. The XG is a little bit higher if you look on the MLS website, but FootMob, which gets everything from Opta, who I think pretty much everyone, whatever league you're in, everyone kind of sources everything from Opta. You know, yeah, their XG was 0.68, and their expected goals on target was 0.71. So, you know, they're not outperforming their XG for sure. They're not outperforming their expected goals on target. But that's what you have to do. If you're not going to create a lot of chances, then you do need to be able to, you know, you need to have players that can outperform, you know, what the statistics say they should be getting. I mean, I don't even want to talk about Veroni anymore. I started a fundraiser last night to try and crowdsource some of the $2.4 million that would be required to buy him out. And we've got $210 already. Right. And we've got a couple other people, guy I used to coach and was an assistant coach with me. You know, he's pledged to throw some money in. Hop Skip said he's down to throw some money in. Someone, I think it was Big John. Big John's in for $100. You know, if 500 people, you know, we get about 500 views per episode here. You know, if you're all willing to throw in $100 like Big John, you know, we're going to be well on our way to, you know, trying to help the club solve this problem.
Yep. No, I think that's fair. Unfortunately, I think a lot of those 500 people are also people that have sunk a fair amount of their own money into watching the games. So I wouldn't wish that on them. A little extra financial hardship for them. But so actually this is, you know, we talked about this. I think I was hosting a podcast earlier in the year after they announced the potential rule changes for a second buyout. And I think you were firmly on the we should buy out Tommy McNamara train. Are you changing your mind on that one? Do you think that it's still McNamara, or do you think that it makes more sense to go with Vrioni or someone else?
Well, it's still expensive to get rid of Veroni. I mean, that's the thing. It's still going to cost them a lot of money. You know, like it, you know, the math that I did out was basically you're walking away from, you know, like a $4 million transfer fee. You got to pay him $2.4 million in salary to make him go away. And then you've got to possibly spend that same amount of money all over again to go and acquire the person that's going to replace him. Like, so it's still expensive. And I still don't think the Crafts are going to, they're not going to go for that. They're just going to tell Anolfo, like, you know, look, like figure something else out. And, you know, look, just, I don't know. But yeah, the thing is though, you know, like Toronto put Jordan Peruzza on waivers this week. I'd imagine he's cleared waivers by now. I mean, it's Sunday. They put him on waivers. I think they put him on waivers like last Tuesday. It's like, just go and take a guy like that. That's he's like 23 years old. He's shown some goal scoring ability in the past, and at least bring somebody in to give Veroni a little bit of competition. Because, you know, look, I really don't want to be too hard on Bobby Wood, but I mean, Bobby Wood is not an MLS level player anymore with the state that his knee is in. It's just you're getting nothing from up top at all. So yeah, I don't know. One way or another, they've got to try and figure something out. And I think I was the last person offering any hope for Veroni, and that shot in the first half that was curling up and away and you know, it almost ended up hitting the New York supporters group. It was closer to them than it was to the goal. In that moment, I said, forget it. I'm done. I give up.
Yeah. So you were one of the longer holdouts on Veroni. I have had, you know, I've been a little less bullish on him probably for a little longer, but that has more to do with his seeming inability to get himself involved. But we have a lot of questions about Veroni, so I'll save some of that conversation for later. I don't want to
go for all of it now.
Well, I guess with that, Tom, are you ready to get into some listener questions?
Oh yeah, I am ready to go.
Okay. I actually, before we do that, I am told I'm contractually obligated. Greg told me this to mention that the Bryant University Bulldogs won the American East Baseball Championship. So congratulations to them. I did not go to that school. So that was for you. That was for you, Greg. Please don't fire me. Okay. Listener questions are brought to you by Subchuck Law. You can find Subchuck Law's website in our show notes. And with that, we're going to start with a slew of questions about the coach. Of course, Caleb Porter had a bit of a fiery exchange, I think, to put it lightly, with reporters last week, including Blazing Muskets' Sam Minton, where he deflected blame and, you know, was really not particularly candid or you know, maybe pleasant with his responses to some of those questions. So you know, he's built up a pretty significant amount of bad will with the fan base. So there are a lot of questions about his job security this week. We'll start with a few here. So I have a question on Twitter from over there. It says, why does Porter still have a job? There's another one from Soccer Prime saying, is Kraft looking for Porter tonight too? Which is a reference, of course, to some reporting that he was that Kraft, Jonathan Kraft was maybe looking for Caleb Porter after last week's 3-0 home loss. You know, the implication being there too, of course, to let him go. One from Mike in New Hampshire that says Caleb's family is supposedly flying here in the next few weeks. Should they? I've got one from WK Sapolno saying, do people who said Porter stays all season still think so? And one from DC on Twitter that says, how long can this last before a firing occurs? So there's a lot of people, you know, kind of wondering if Caleb Porter's time with this team is coming to a close, right? And I think they're fair questions given the fact that the Revs have now lost 10 games in 13 tries, right? That's, I don't care who the coach is, right? If you have that kind of a record, I think these questions are going to start coming. So, Tom, what do you think? Is there any hope that a firing occurs here, or is there any chance of that? And if so, is it coming soon or is it coming later?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the people that thought Caleb should get the season, what do they think now? I mean, I don't know. I try and avoid I'm not one of those people. I don't really think Andy is either. I don't think anyone on this podcast is on that boat. And actually, you know, I tell you this, the one thing that Porter has potentially done here is in the last week, look, when I came back on Twitter, I was told any revs hashtag is just a complete and total disaster. And it's what Porter has actually done potentially here. Porter has actually united the hashtag. He is bringing us all together, because the one thing we can all collectively agree on is we don't want him to continue with this team. Even as recently as last Saturday, there were still people saying, hey, look, give it time. You know, he's got a system, you know, so on and so forth. And I totally disagree with that. But even those people, even they have turned and said, whatever about Porter's system working or not working, they just don't like him now because of how he is in press conference, because of how arrogant he is, because how condescending he is towards us. And now, you know, he's added in, going after reporters because he doesn't like the questions that they asked him at the time that they were asked. I mean, it's just like, it's incredible. He is the unifying force among this fan base. He should be gone already. He should have been gone after last week. Like, you lost again. You're full of excuses. You're attacking the media. And let's not get confused here about like the type of media that he's attacking. Like Seth and Sam and you and me and everybody else, like we all just do this part time. You know, like we've got full time jobs. Like it actually requires a lot of effort and a lot of time that we could be spending doing other things to cover this team because we enjoy it and we're trying to offer something to the fans that do follow and care about this team. And these are the types of people that Porter now feels like he needs to go after. And Sam got no apology either. Sam should still be waiting around for his apology from Caleb Porter. Basically saying, you know, hey, look, I know it's Sam. I know it's not your fault that we lost this week. But they make me do these press conferences right after the game. And, you know, boy, just I'm really in a bad mood sometimes. And I took it out on you. Why that apology has not been forthcoming is beyond my understanding. Look, he should be gone. He should have been gone last week.
So to your point, Tom, I've never been on the, we give him the year train. I was a little skeptical of the hire kind of when it was announced. I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt to start the season. My confidence in my idea of how long he should get, like how long his leash should be, has just diminished right over time. Right. You know, this beginning of the season, I'm like, we'll see how it goes. If things are, even medium given the season. If things are not so medium, then like he gets through the summer transfer window or whatever it was. So, I think that Greg and maybe Sean have been on this podcast saying they think that he would get through the summer transfer window as well, because, in fairness, he hasn't had, an opportunity to really bring in a bunch of players yet. But losing and losing consistently and losing in the ways that they have been, right, that changes the calculus for, I imagine for most fans, but for me included, right? Like the more the losing continues, the less way out of it I see with Caleb Porter at the helm, right? I haven't seen anything on the field, and I know yet in his interviews and press conferences, he's saying everything's fine off the field. I have not heard anything specifically from any of the players or coaching staff that things are not fine off the field. It doesn't look like things are fine in the locker room based upon the way the team's playing on the field, but that's a separate thing. But just purely on the field, they haven't even looked particularly good. I think, we can point to like a handful of games, two or three games where, they looked like they were okay. With the results being just loss after loss after loss, and then your two wins being a home game, a home win against Charlotte, that you won 1-0 while Charlotte had two point blank chances that they just shot into the stands, and in a game against Chicago, who for some reason refuses to be good, So, you know, that's what you're hanging your hat on. And then just all the rest of them are losses. And the other, and the draw was against Chicago too. And that was, you know, maybe shouldn't have been a draw either, because their goalkeeper dropped the ball directly on the goal mouth. So, you know,
oh yeah, that's right.
We are close here. you know, if the scheduling had been slightly different, there's a chance that this team could be 0-13. Right. Or whatever, you know, format you use for win draws, losses, win losses, draws. But
yeah, there's no more games against Chicago.
That's true. Well, unless we meet them in the playoffs, Tom, which I'm sure is coming.
Yeah.
Just that playoff series.
Yeah. So that
England Chicago playoff series.
That well is run dry already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Chicago, I forget the stat. I'll have to look it up at some point in the show, but I'm pretty sure Chicago has only made the playoffs once in the last some crazy number of years, 10, 11, 12 years or something like that. They've been pretty consistently bad. So for the Revs to be hanging their hat on a draw and a win against Chicago this year is, you know, that's a tough spot to be at. But all of that to say that, you know, we're 10 losses into the season, 13 games in. Caleb Porter as a coach should be feeling some pressure. As to whether or not he will actually get fired, I don't know. But he certainly should be a candidate for that at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Greg broke out the, you know, the hot seat meter, and I said it was a from a rational human being perspective, it's out of 10. But you have to adjust for how the Revs do things. And, you know, I think it's maybe up to from a 6 up to a 7. I mean, it's a loss at home. You didn't even score. And, you know, somebody like, well, you know, the defense was okay last night. No, it actually wasn't. The defense was collect. I mean, as a collective group, the defense was poor last night. I don't know if we'll get into it or not, but Polster and Kay, good Lord. I mean, no understanding of how to play in a double pivot at just none. And that's the other thing too. We keep talking about the Porter system, but there's very little discussion about the other two aspects of that, or, you know, the other three aspects of that system. It's all about the attacking play. Very little about transition, which hasn't been particularly good in either direction. Very little discussion about the defending, which has been poor, and they've gotten away with some of their poor defending, you know, as recently as last night, and attacking and defending corners. You know, they're not really creating much on or set pieces, not really creating much when they're attacking set pieces, and they've had issues. So, like, there's just been so much talk about the attacking aspects of his system, and I actually think that's really what the focus is on. I don't think they really spend that much time on defensive structure. They clearly spend a lot of time on the horrible attacking structure in which they form a giant circle around the field and refuse to play through the middle, and then just get bored and go over the top. Like,
yeah.
God. Talk right. About the same stuff every week. It's just, this can't, I mean, this can't continue for another 21 games. I mean, right. Like, good Lord.
So I've been saying this since, I don't know, see, it's week 3 or 4, you know, but I'm always reminded of that. And I'm sure this quote is misattributed and I have no idea who it's actually attributed to, but I've always heard it as, I forget, is it Einstein? I don't even know. But the definition of insanity is trying the same thing and expecting different results. And it just feels like, you know, the way that Caleb Porter has doubled down on this system throughout the season. And, you know, he's been blaming red cards, refereeing decisions, injuries, player performances, things like that. And it's not the problem with the system, right? The fact that we keep trotting it out week after week, and in a week where we think we looked okay, we generated less than one expected goal and we lost 1-0 at home. Right.
And that's so progress.
It's just, you know, the definition of insanity is rolling out the Caleb Porter system week after week and expecting to get, you know, a decent attacking output. And, you know, and we talk about the offense a lot because it has been poor. But the defense has also been pretty shockingly bad throughout the course of this season.
Yeah.
I posted an article on Boston Sports Nation. By the way, I'm sure people have seen this if they're on Twitter, but I have officially switched allegiances here. So I'll be writing for the Blazing Musket. Have some articles that are brewing that are not quite ready for publishing yet, but you'll be able to find my content over there. But in my last article for the for Boston Sports Nation, I wrote about how close this team is to setting the wrong kinds of records. And, you know, before this loss already, they were well on pace for, you know, bottom five in terms of goals scored, bottom five in terms of goals allowed, and bottom five in terms of points. You know, so this team is not just underperforming. They're performing at a, you know, close to historically bad level. And it would not take much of a push in a negative direction to get them into the record books for worst performances.
That's great. But look, on the one positive point there, you know, Sam Minton certainly knows how to pick a lineup. That's for sure. And I think he is well within his rights to question Caleb Porter's ability to pick a lineup, because the lineup that he has picked here by going out and acquiring Andy Judd fills a hole in the Blazing Musket with your statistical deep dives and charts and kind of laying out both a visual and, you're able to write and visualize very well, deep statistics. You do a lot of research, which, you know, some painful research, it sounds like, as well. And I'm very much looking forward to being able to read your articles free of advertising. It's a big step in the right direction. So Sam Minton, you know, it should be free to question anyone's lineup, because the lineup that he has put together, the Blazing Musket, continues to get better and better.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Tom. It's appreciated. I look forward to writing some similar stuff, some more statistical deep dives. And yes, I'm also hoping people will be able to read them without as many ads. Go subscribe to the Blazing Musket. And quickly on that point about Sam Minton and the lineup, I believe in this game, Henry Kessler picks up a yellow card, and that puts him over the accumulation limit for yellow cards. So he'll be missing this next game.
I can't wait.
There is a chance we could see him in the lineup. I think it's based upon his Caleb Porter's comments. I think it's maybe a slim chance, but
he's not going to. No. He's not. He won't do it. Because this is the thing, Andy. What happens? What happens if Romney plays next week, and the Revs win, and they keep a clean sheet? That would be Caleb Porter's worst nightmare, right? Some kid with a blog's telling me how to pick my lineup, and then I pick the guy he thinks I should be picking, and we win and we get a clean sheet. That would be incredible.
I think he thinks that some guy on Twitter is telling some guy with a blog how to run his lineup. It seems like a good idea at this point.
It would be the most hysterical thing that has happened all season. If Romney plays, they win and keep a clean sheet. And then Porter has to come out. If I was Sam, I would go to the press conference and I wouldn't even ask a question. I'd just sit there and just smile the whole time. That's it. I wouldn't even, nothing. Sam, any questions? Oh, no, I'm good.
No, I'm just here. I'm just here to watch today. Thanks. All right, we do have a few more questions on Porter. I'll try and wrap them up quickly because we have covered a lot of ground here. Revs Wolves on Twitter asks, does the Revs' performance improving today, despite the fact that they can't score, mean we're stuck with Porter for the rest of the year? My answer to this question is I don't know, because in a rational world, I think Porter would have been let go a while ago, or with different owners or with a different organization. Or under different circumstances, he would have been let go already, right? You can't lose 10 of 13 games and expect to have job security. But the fact that he's still here now, I couldn't tell you when the Crafts are going to see the need to move on.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, we're assuming that it was an improved performance. It's like, this is nobody got sent off.
Right. Well, so actually after last week's game, right, during that press conference, Porter was talking about how, he was disappointed that the Revs went down a man so early because they didn't get to show the improvement that they have made that the guys were really looking to show the fans that they'd made improvements. And so, 11v11, if this is what the improvement looks like, okay. If the improvement is another home loss, okay.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem like a ton of improving, but
Yeah, like, I mean, oh, God.
Yeah. All right, yeah. So we have one from Walk, and that's a Twitter name that I'm never going to be able to read. So I'm sorry if I butchered that, Mr. Walk. Besides Bai and the goalkeeper, this roster is better than what Bruce was left with when he was put on leave. By that point, the team was within striking distance from Cincy. This roster does not need a teardown. This roster has enough talent. The teardown should be somewhere else. So the implication here, of course, I think is that Porter should be the one to go. But this brings up an interesting question that I have, which is, you know, let's say Caleb Porter makes it to the summer transfer window, you know, presumably at this rate, losing all but one game from here until then. What does a teardown and rebuild look like, and does it change anything? Does it improve anything, Tom?
Well, I mean, no, I mean, he's right, or they are right, because I would walk doesn't really reveal much. Yeah, the roster does not need to be tore down and you know, and these 3, 4, 5 players that Porter keeps talking about needing. No, they're right. It's actually much simpler teardown. You get rid of Porter, his coaches, PA, you send them all packing, and you bring in a new group. And you see if they can turn things around first, and then you think about moving players second. Because the thing is that, you know, Porter has said this too. He's like, hey, like, this is, you know, this is the group. I believe that this is the group that can get it done. And he's got some guys in that group that are, you know, they're like Elliot Ness. You know, they're untouchable. Veroni, undroppable. Why? Polster, undroppable. Why? Kessler, why? Arriaga, why? Ivicic, why? Why are all these guys beyond being dropped? What is any of them done to show that they should be out there game in and game out? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're sitting there talking about a team that can only build up the sides, cannot play through the middle. You know, it took 25 minutes last night for them to connect two passes centrally consecutively. And that came from Carlos Hill dropping. Like, Carlos Hill is starting to turn into Andrea Pirlo. He has to drop, you know, 10 yards in front of the center backs, take the ball off him, and then he seems to be the only one capable of playing a forward pass in the middle of the field. It took them 25 minutes to do that. But yet, Polster's out there every week. I don't even know Kay. I can't remember anything Kay did from last night. Nothing. Good, bad, or otherwise. Well, besides his inability to cover space or play, like nothing. He'll probably be out there again next week. Polster. Yeah. You have a field day with Polster. Even for him yesterday was beyond bad yesterday, but he'll be out there until he gets his yellow card accumulation and gets dropped. Kessler's only going to get dropped. Yellow card seems to be the only MLS stepping in and saying this player must take a break. Seems to be the only way that the team changes. So that's the thing. Like, why is Hark's not getting an opportunity? Why is Maciel, by the way, can make many, many types of passes that none of the other four center mids that have gotten playing time on this team are capable of making. And he's wasting away at 24 years old playing for Revs too. You know, he's going to be spraying passes all over the place up in New Hampshire again today. And, you know, it's like, so why is Maciel not getting more of a look in? Why isn't Harkes getting more of a look in? Why are you refusing to do anything besides play Veroni up top? Like, I just, these things need to be answered first.
Yeah.
Right. Can Harkes contribute? Can Maciel do anything? Can we find a role for Buck? There's teams all over Europe that want to buy Buck, but Porter doesn't think he's good enough to play. Like, these questions need to be answered with a new coach first. Then you can look at making changes. It can't be Porter making changes.
Yep. I think that's a fair question. All right, let's see. We have a question here from CMag on Twitter. I'm almost afraid to ask because this is MLS, but has any other new coach with a start like this retained their job? So I'm going to say off the bat, I did not research this, so I can't say for certain, but I would argue that any coach that has a season start like this probably shouldn't retain their job. I think there's, you know, the circumstances of Bruce's departure and the way that last season ended And with the new, or with Anolfo being named sporting director and this being the hire, I can understand how those circumstances are probably different from a lot of other coaches who start like this. But, you know, 10 losses and 13 tries, you know, you probably should be at least on the hot seat, if not gone.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm sure there are guys that haven't gotten through even half a season and have been let go. You know, like there's no relegation, but I mean, I think DC United can somebody like halfway through the season, because I guess there was bad blood in the locker room. The player said he was like making them work too hard or something, so they got rid of him.
Yeah, there was a similar thing, I think, in Atlanta as well. So there have been, but those things occur when the locker room is so far gone and the ownership recognizes that. I wish we had, you know, something other than on field to indicate that, you know, the locker room was either solid or not solid here. On field, it certainly looks like there's questions being asked in that locker room, but for the time being, it hasn't broken out in a way that ownership has made note of.
I just can't imagine how. Like, you know, Porter keeps saying like, oh, hey, everything in the locker room is great. It's like, really? It is? How is that even possible?
Yeah.
I can't be his man management. I mean, good Lord. The guy trashes people in public. God only knows what he says to them, behind closed doors. I mean, God.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Yeah. Corey Kapuch on Twitter says, do the Crafts need to hire a CEO to run the entire soccer operation? So, you know, we're well into fiscal quarter two here and things are not going well. So maybe a CEO is what's needed to turn things around. All right. We have another question. I think this is the last one I have on Caleb Porter, and then we'll shift gears here because we spent a good half hour now talking about Porter. So Porter's promised win failed. I don't know if you caught this earlier in the week, Tom, but he.
Oh, I did.
Yes, there was a social media post about the amputee soccer game that came right after this week's game, where he said that he knew that they were going to win, or he knew that the amputee soccer team was going to win, just like the Revs were going to win, and they were going to get 6 points on the weekend. So not quite as firm a promise as he gave earlier in the season on 98.5 The Sports Hub, but you know, enough of something to make it seem like there was some sort of promise there, and that did not come to fruition, obviously. And then John asks on Twitter, do you think that the Reds should go after Miguel Piojo Herrera, the former Mexico and Club America coach? You know, he plays a direct style of soccer, his experience is a big name, and he has a big personality and is currently a free agent. So any thoughts on that potential coaching swap, or do you have anybody else in mind, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, sure, why not? It would be different. So right. Yeah, have the Revs ever had a Mexican head coach before?
Not that I can think of, but that Sean would remember better than I would.
You know, so sure. Or Giovanni Savarese. I don't think he has a job either. Give him a call. Robin Fraser plays for is taking a consulting role down in Connecticut with a team that doesn't have any money to build the stadium, so I can't imagine he's anchored in there too well. Why don't you give him I don't know, call somebody. There's three guys right there. There you go, Anolfo. There, you need a list of five. We just gave you three.
There you go. And I did see earlier, I didn't include it in the question portion of DC's tweet, but he did say that we missed on Gio Savarese. So that's, you know,
he doesn't have a job though, does he?
I don't, not that I'm aware of, no. But
he's still there.
almost anything, any sort of change there would probably be a net positive at this point. All right, we have a bunch of questions about Vrioni, so I want to get into those because that was the other major takeaway from this week's game. So we have a question from Antho Metropolis on Threads, be our friend on Threads, that says, more missed chances from Vrioni. Is Wood able to start? And if so, any argument for why he shouldn't?
Yeah, I mean, the remaining cartilage in his knee would probably say, can we just stop now? Like, I mean,
right.
This is quickly. And then Andy, let's see your reaction. I don't know if you're aware of this. Vrioni played 82 minutes last night. Okay. He attempted five passes in 82 minutes on the field. And he had 14 touches. He had five shots attempted and five passes attempted. He attempted as many passes as shots.
So that is not shocking to me as someone who has dug through his general involvement numbers over the last couple of years. In either system, right? In both Caleb Porter's system and in Bruce Arena's system, was just not a player who is involved with teammates in buildup in the attack, right? You know, we've talked on the show about how he wants the ball in a very specific way, and then he looks to shoot, or, you know, more often lately, he looks to try and dribble up to a defender and then, cut back and lose the ball or kick the ball out of bounds. But, you know, he is not a forward who is, by his nature, one who is looking to bring other players into the play. Nor is he really looking for ways to make himself involved in the play, right? He's not running back to try and get on the ball. He's just trying to hug the back line and you know, try to find opportunities to get that ball that he wants to try and get a shot off. So I'm not particularly shocked at those numbers, but they're, you know, for a team that doesn't score very often, they're not good. And if you're not going to be, a player who wants to get the ball in a very specific way and also a player who scores, then you darn well better be a player who can link up with your teammates and keep the ball in dangerous positions.
Yeah. I mean, if he was scoring, you know, a goal every other game and not getting involved in the build-up play all that much, you know, okay, fine. Or if the team was able to bring the ball into the attacking third without having to utilize him on a frequent basis, which they're not, then, you know, then okay. You could be more accepting of the fact that he hardly touches the ball and he hardly contributes to the build up or the attack or anything. But like, those things aren't happening, right? Like, they're not getting the ball into the attacking third all that often, and they're not able to find the very limited types of service that he wants. But like you said, he's also not doing anything else to help out. You know, when other forwards, when they're not getting on the ball and things aren't happening, that, you know, there's a level of frustration. They start dropping deeper. You know, they actually come back into the play to try and say, okay, come on, let's get something going here. You know, get the ball to me. Like, I think they attempted like one up back through last night. You know, play up to the forward, knock it back to a mid, and then hit a wide play, right? Quick succession of passes there, up, back, play it through, get some guys going towards goal. Nothing, doesn't happen. The shot that he took, that the one time he held up a long ball, turns, he's got three guys on him. He actually had an easy layoff to Esmir. He could have dropped it to Esmir, who had space to dribble and carry the attack forward. And then possibly, you know, Esmir would have pulled at least one of those three defenders towards him. Then maybe Vroni's able to get back into get the ball back in a better shooting position. But instead, you know, the one time he holds it up, he turns, sees three guys, has no clear path on goal, and then shoots and misses, and it curls like out towards the corner flag. I mean, he doesn't help himself, to say the least.
Yeah. His involvement has generally been poor. And I don't think it was asked in the questions thread here, but I have seen questions, you know, kind of insinuating like if there were a different striker here, like if there was like in Columbus, if it was like Cucho Hernandez, are things different in this game, right? Like, if there's a striker who wants to get more on the ball, and I think I looked at the statistics on Cucho, and he does tend to get involved, especially in wide areas, and then he'll pull centrally. Does that open new avenues for the Revs in the attack? And, you know, does it lead to more scoring chances? Because as of right now, it seems like Vrioni's up on an island, maybe either by tactical design or by preference design. And, you know, they're not finding him with the ball, and he's not finding teammates with the ball. And it's just like there's a whole complete disconnect in that area of the attack.
Yeah. I mean, that can't be the plan. And if it is, it's a plan that needs to be replaced with a new one. I mean, like,
well, actually, so in this game, I noticed first half, especially, I think, so, you know, I don't want to dump on the Revs too hard because they did at times look like they had, you know, they were able to string a few passes together. But even when they were, especially towards the end of the first half, the only way that I saw them trying to get a ball into a dangerous attacking position, so they'd knock the ball wide and they would try to cross the ball into the center for somebody. Presumably Vrioni would be the target in that scenario, but he's just not, like, getting up for headers in attacking positions is not a forte of his. I think he got, I'm remembering at least one header that went over the goal, but he might have had a second. But even still, as a method of getting the ball into your center forward, that can't be option A. And that seemed like that was option A for a good chunk of the first half.
Yeah, and then like Lima put a cross in at the near post, and you know that's the second time in the last couple of weeks where, you know, there's a ball there for someone to go and attack, and no one goes and attacks it. You know, this is pretty simple stuff. Ball goes wide on the right. There should be a player that, you know, the team knows, okay, the ball goes to the outside back. If he's looking to try and put a cross in, then someone is making a run to the near post, someone's making a back post run, and someone's making a run to the penalty spot. And those runs, they're just not there. Vrioni doesn't even, in those situations, Vrioni very rarely even makes a run in any direction. And there's no, like, you know, there's very few instances where one of the center mids is looking to make a run in there as well. Like, so, you know, a cross comes in that, hey, if somebody attacks it at the near post, maybe they're able to get a touch, maybe they're able to get a nick on the ball, you know, maybe make something happen. But instead, nah, just comes in, it's easily dealt with by the defender. You know, and that's frustrating to the guys that are that are putting crosses in. It's like, hey, look, I had time and space to put in a cross, I put it in, and there's no one there. And then people say, oh, well, Lima can't cross the ball. It's like, well, he can, but there needs to be targets. And you need to keep highlighting to your attacking teammates that, hey, look, if I deliver a cross into the penalty area, someone needs to be there. Like, look, I just did it again. Like, where are you guys?
Yeah, I think that's all very fair. Let's get to a few more Vrioni questions. So I have one here from Kim. It says, honestly, most of the game, I thought the Revs looked like the better team. Where it fell off is the final third and finishing. So many chances were squandered. I want to say Porter is to blame, but I think that that's on the player's execution. Do you agree? So I think we kind of covered that a little bit, right? From a, you know, the tactical system can't be, you know, or at least shouldn't be wing the ball wide and then throwing crosses to a player that's not well suited to deal with crosses, or at least, you know, that was one of the methods that they were using to try to get the players involved. Is it down to execution, or is there a general, you know, can we chalk it up to coaching here?
I think it's, you know, I think it's a little bit of both, but again, you can say, well, it's not Porter's fault that Vrioni can't finish chances. It's like, well, but Porter plays him every week. So it is his fault. He continues to put him out there. I think we're well past the point where Tronco, as soon as Borrero was able to play, it should have been, okay, when Borrero comes in, Vrioni comes off, Tronco goes up top, and it's Esmer and Borrero as the two wide players. You know, with Boateng as an option to come off the bench for one or the other, because, you know, he's been able to stretch the play and create some chances as well. You know, that really, we're well past the point of that being the go-to option, right? Barrero's in, Chonkali's in, Esmer. Those three should be on the field together as much as possible. And all you have to do to make that happen is remove Vrioni, and there's no reason not to. So that's Porter's fault. He keeps playing. Carles, you know, he had a shot from distance last night that, you know, goes in, I don't know, one time out of 50. You know, his presence in the attacking third, yeah, okay, he's still getting he's still racking up a lot of, shot assists or whatever. But, you know, they're not shots from good positions. They're blocked. They're softly hit. They're from ridiculous angles. I think it's a little bit of everything. But again, it's, you know, there was a sequence last night. They must have strung together 15, 16 passes in a row. But they were avoiding the penalty area. Like there's a force field around it. It's a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I think that, you know, blame can be placed all around. In the attack specifically, I think, you know, the people who probably are most, most specifically to blame, you know, are maybe Caleb's tactical vision and his assistance on playing Vrioni and Vrioni for, you know, not making more of the chances that he has, however limited they might be. We kind of covered this question already. This one's from Twitter, from Kyle Ekstrom. It says, do you think we need a full teardown? I think we kind of talked about that. And I think we also kind of talked about maybe using a buyout on Vrioni. Is there another striker let's say we buy out Vrioni. Is there another striker type that would work better in this system?
I haven't gone on like transfer market to see like what strikers are going to become available on July 1st. But I mean, you wouldn't have to look very far or that hard to find, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 strikers that are going to become available, in 5 weeks that would possibly be a better option than Vrioni. I mean, it's not going to be a difficult search. But the thing is too, is that, you know, they need it's Bobby Wood at this point, you know, he just can't be relied on anymore to play or to have any success when he does play. So even if you do buy out Vrioni, it's like, well, okay, now you need to go and get two strikers. So it's a lot of money, and the Revs are, they spend a decent amount of money. I think they have like the seventh highest payroll in MLS, but you know, they're not going to be interested in just throwing away, you know, $8-9 million, because again, this is the thing. What's cheaper? Just fire Porter or spend $12 million to get rid of Vrioni and get another striker? Like, hopefully, hopefully getting rid of Porter is the cheaper option. Hopefully they're not paying him that much.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I think I mentioned this on a podcast a couple weeks ago with Sam, which is, you know, if you're looking to make one change that has the highest impact, right, in terms of players, I think putting someone on, you know, at center forward who's going to contribute more. But really the option would be change coaching, right? Because there's more at fault here. There's a bigger problem than just your striker not scoring. That is a big problem, but there's problems up and down the field that I think, you know, you could reasonably fix with a coaching change, or not fix, but, you know, maybe stop the bleeding. I have a couple questions here. So I have one from James Downing. It's about some potential comments picked up on a hot mic. I'm going to read from an email from Dave Capone, though. You can send us emails. We will try and answer those questions as well. It says, if you were listening to the local radio option on Apple TV, they kept playing the feed after 98.5 goes to commercial. And on this one, you can hear Feldman sign off and both commentators put their headsets down. You can hear them walking away as they're walking away. You can make out Feldman tell Charlie something about Vrioni, and Charlie says very loudly, "He's so bad." And then the studio guy picks up the headset and it's all muffled. So I went back. I tried to get the radio call to show up as an option on Apple TV for the game replay so that I could see what that audio was. I wasn't able to, so I have not verified this truly happened at all. I believe since we got two questions specifically about it from a couple different people about Charlie maybe saying that Vrioni was so bad. I don't think that there's much further to discuss here, but it's not a great look that, it's you have commentary people, maybe talking poorly of Vrioni, but I don't know.
Can you blame him? I mean,
really, yeah.
It's not even controversial. Like, if he had said that on the broadcast, I mean, I know the two of them work for the refs. I'd imagine they probably have to be careful about what they say. But I didn't go to the game last week, and I was listening to the broadcast, and, they're critical of the players. So, I mean, yeah. it's not surprising.
No. And to be honest, I've, in previous broadcasts with Charlie, I don't think he's been particularly afraid to call out when he thinks players aren't performing the way they should have. And I think that includes Vrioni in previous seasons. I'll have to go back and double check. But, I won't put words in his mouth specifically. But Vrioni's performance in this game was not great, and it hasn't been great for a while. So I don't think we would necessarily disagree with the sentiment there.
No, no surprise.
All right. Well, we've been really positive so far, Tom. So let's do a complete 180 and answer Ryan Duplessis' question on Twitter. What are your positive thoughts on tonight's game, if any?
Jones played well. Thought he had a good game. He made some good underlapping runs. So he looked, he looked like that was, maybe one of his better performances of the season. Good to see him be able to stay out there for as long as he did as well. I think he played, he played the whole game, and, just coming back from an injury. Porter said that he was out for 2 months on 98.5. I was like, Wait a minute. Like, I mean, technically there were two calendar months in which he didn't play. Like, he missed games in April and May, but he did not miss 2 months. He's played in 9 of 13 games this season. But anyway, just one of the many amusing things that he says during the course of the week. I thought Jones played well. What other positives? The zero gravity as the pregame drink of choice, that seems to be building momentum. I saw some of that on Twitter, that people have heeded my advice to pick up some zero gravity on the way to the game, which I did last night as well. My wife and I enjoyed a couple of tasty zero gravity beverages out in the parking lot to kind of, savor the moment, the nice weather. It's decent atmosphere before the game. You know, it's a bit of a good time. And then, you know, then you get in, you sit down, and it's definitely summertime at Gillette, because it's, you know, you can tell it's summer when there's 500 kids just roaming the stadium, trying to sit in seats that aren't theirs, getting up over and over and over again, getting in everyone's way, being a general disturbance to everyone because they're not really there to watch the soccer game. Like, it's definitely summertime at Gillette. But yeah, so Dwan Jones and Zero Gravity. That's all I got.
Well, I will, you know, I'm always game to agree that a positive is beer from Zero Gravity. I'm on board with that. Okay, so we have a couple of questions here that are kind of about, you know, the fans maybe having an impact. So I have a question from Matthew Skillen on Twitter. At what point is it on the fans to make a stand? And one from Cody Hall on Twitter that says, why should/shouldn't I cancel my season membership after 11 years? So two questions that are kind of, you know, more oriented to, is there any sort of impact that the fans can have on the on-field product, I guess. My answer for this is not really. If we're thinking broadly, right, you know, there's certainly, you can, you know, supporters groups can boycott, fans can boycott, and that will make some noise. But I've been following this team for a while now. And while they don't particularly like negative press, and they don't particularly like it when, you know, fans, you know, make some sort of a public stand against the on-field results, I haven't seen that be enough to enforce any sort of real change from higher up. So I don't know, Tom, if you have a different perspective on this, but I would say if you're not enjoying the games, you know, I wouldn't blame you. And I also wouldn't ask you to continue watching something that you're not enjoying. But I wouldn't expect it to have an impact.
No, I mean, this is the thing, 'cause, you know, my wife and I are going through this discussion now about, you know, renewing our season tickets for next year. And you know, the thing is that we do enjoy going, you know, like it is, I know some people don't like the stadium, you know, and whatever, but you know, it's a good time, you know, it's a nice thing to look forward to, as something to do, you know, every other Saturday, you know, it gets you outside now that the weather is starting to turn, you know, and walking around the stadium last night, you know, we did a lap, turning right as it were, but anyway, I did a lap around the stadium, and, you know, there's a lot of people there that would be stuck in a similar situation where, like, you see people walking around, like, you know, they have shirts on from, like, you know, from like years past, or players that aren't on the team anymore. And, you know, they have their scarves on, and you know, like, and you know, you recognize faces, like, oh yeah, we see them every week, or oh, they're always here. You know, there's a couple older ladies that are always there with Boston Breakers hats on in our section. Like, you see that there are people out there that actually, you know, really do care about this team and are committed and come year after year. And they want to continue to do that, even though the team oftentimes doesn't give them any reason to do so. So you kind of get stuck in this catch-22 of, like, you know, I want to go out to, you know, I want to go out to soccer games in the summer. You know, the ticket prices are reasonable. It's a lot more, Gillette's a lot more accessible than Fenway Park for sure. And you know, whatever about the stadium that they're building down in Rhode Island, you know, that's not going to be super accessible either. So it's unfortunate that people like that find themselves in this position. But the reality is that you look around at all the other people in the stadium that are there with tickets from their youth club, or just there as kind of like something to do for fun. Like, they don't care about the results, but they show up and they buy tickets and they buy food. They get dinner in Patriot Place before the game. Like, they generate money for the team, and ultimately enough of those people show up, there isn't really anything that the year in and year out supporters, you know, the 10-year season ticket members, the 5-year season ticket members, there's not a whole lot that those of us that are in that category, there's not a lot that we can do, because if we stop showing up, that's maybe 3,000, 4,000 of the people that were there last night. You know, like the season ticket member event, you know, there's a lot of people there that really care about this team, but they get outweighed by the thousands and thousands of people that are just there because it's, you know, it's something fun to do on a Saturday and the Celtics are in Indy. And you know, as far as like the fort, yeah, there's always rumblings. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to walk out. We're going to blah, 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 blah. Like, the reality is the Crafts and the team, like, they don't care about the fort. They buy the cheapest tickets. And I'm not faulting for them. I'm just trying to like explain like why the team isn't going to care about the fort. Like, you buy the cheapest tickets, you stay in the parking lot until the game starts. So that means that you're drinking and eating in the parking lot. You're not drinking and eating in Patriot Place or inside the stadium. And, you know, you kind of swear a lot with your chants, which most of the people there don't appreciate, myself included. Like, I'm really like, yeah, it's cool to say the F word, but like, it's cool to say the F word, like when you're in the 10th grade, to be honest. So like, no, there's really, there's not a lot that they can do. You'd have to get the whole stadium to stop showing up. And that's just, it's just simply not going to happen.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we are in that part of the year where I think you mentioned earlier, where it's a good chunk of the stadium is full of people who are, you know, not season ticket holders, who are coming on either a, you know, multi-game pack or just for the single game, just as a thing to do in the nice weather. You know, so the impact that, you know, the more involved fans can have is somewhat muted. Yeah, I would love it if there was something that, you know, that we could, if there was like a form we could fill out and just check a bunch of boxes and send it in, they, you know, they read out comment cards or whatever it happens to be. But I don't think that's likely. You know, when my wife and I decided to get season tickets a while ago, it was towards the end of the Jay Heaps era. And we all, the people who've been watching since then will remember that that wasn't exactly the most fun of times either. So we kind of had to go in with this mentality that we were going for, you know, for the game day experience, and, you know, the results be damned. And that's, you know, that has remained true. The results be damned indeed. We have a couple questions here on the defense. So I have one from Monsieur Butts on Twitter. Do you think Romney's going to play next week with Kessler out, or Porter give it to Mensah just to be stubborn? I think we kind of talked about that. I don't think either of us think that he's at the top of the list of people to be able to start. And I have one here from Steve McGrogan on Twitter, who asks how long until Bye is back. So I don't know, Tom, if you have any more insight on this than I do. I know that Bye is back in practice. He's nearing just about 10 months since his injury. So, you know, these things typically have a 9 to 12 month recovery timeline. Barrera's was about a year, and he's still kind of working his way back up to fitness. So I wouldn't expect to see Bye for at least maybe a month more. But that, I don't know if you have any more specifics on that, Tom.
Yeah, the last I heard was three to 4 weeks.
Right.
So end of June. And then that, you know, that's probably like able to come off the bench for 15 minutes, 4 weeks away from a 15 minute cameo. So I think you're probably looking at League's Cup might be the first time that he starts and plays the full 90.
Right. That kind of transitions on outside backs to a few questions we have. So there's one here from Trey on Twitter that says, it's not a question now, a fact, Ben Sweat is better than Nick Lima. I'm going to push back on that one a bit, because I don't think we're accurately remembering in this tweet how bad Ben Sweat was for us last year. I can understand some frustration with Nick Lima in this game, but I also think I can understand frustration with just about everybody on the field.
Yeah, he was perfectly fine last night. Yeah, you know, he last week it was, oh, this guy can't cross. It's like, well, he put in some decent crosses tonight, but nobody was on the end of him. That's not his fault. There was a little bit of talk on Twitter. People were trying to blame the goal on Lima. They're saying, oh, Lima and Arriaga, neither one of them picked up Keaton Parks. It's like hold on a second. Keaton Parks is the tallest player on the field. Nick Lima is one of the shortest players on the field. In what tactical game plan would you want Nick Lima marking Keaton Parks on a cross into the box? And the thing to keep in mind is Parks, and this is not directly related to the Lima question, but I've been holding my tongue here for an hour and 10 minutes. The Parks goal, he is a deep midfielder, which would mean that typically when he makes a run into the penalty area, the expectation would be that he would be tracked by a midfielder from the New England Revolution. When the ball before the cross was being played to the player that put the cross in. I don't remember his name. Doesn't matter. Gray or whatever. Porter is in front of Parks. And if you want to dispute this, if you think I'm just picking on Polster because I don't particularly like him as a soccer player, go and watch the replay because it's in the replay. He lets Parks go, and he knows he lets Parks go because he turns and points. He is trying to tell someone else to mark the player that he's supposed to be marking, and he just lets Parks go, runs into the penalty area, and then Porter, in a very, very casual jog, just stands there and watches his player, his responsibility, jump up over two short guys and knock the ball into the back of the net, and the refs lose the game. So, if you want to blame that on Nick Lima, you're more than welcome to, but I would suggest that you go and watch that replay a couple times and see if maybe you come to a different conclusion.
I'm with you on that one, Tom. And actually, that kind of ties in with a trio of questions that we have here about the midfield. So I have one from Porter on Twitter that says, I wasn't able to watch the game, but how would you rate the Polster K double pivot tonight? I have one from Tim O'Brien that says, what dirt does Polster have on Porter? And then somewhat related, I have from Brandon Santos that says, why is Buck iced out of this team? So, you know, the impression I'm getting is you weren't particularly enthralled with the Polster K midfield, and you know, if not, do you think that Buck might be someone that could step in here and do a better job?
Well, God, I did read Porter's question before we came on. First of all, a double pivot. It wasn't a double pivot because in order for it to be a double pivot, there would have to be pivoting taking place. That does not happen with these two. They both vacate the same space at the same time. Like they're both like K is forward putting pressure on a player and Polster is in the exact same like horizontal line that K is in, that they don't pivot. Like there's no pivoting. They both just clear out and leave that. They don't cover for one another. They almost never cover for each other. The defensive positioning that they take up is typically poor. They're on the outside of a player who is able to get the ball and turn inside, or they're alongside. They're not screening. They're not marking tight. Like they are massive, massive defensive liabilities, and they don't do anywhere near enough with the ball to justify having the defensive lapses that they, and actually they're not lapses. This is just how they play. So it wasn't a double pivot, and you know, and whatever about playing, you know, a 6 and an 8 or a 6 and a 6 or double inverted sevens or like whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is they don't play their roles effectively in defensive moments. They just do not do it. And actually 20 seconds into the game, ball comes into the middle of the penalty area. And if Kessler doesn't block that, it's probably a goal and they're down 1-0. And where are Kay and Polster to be found? The guy's making a secondary run into the penalty area, right on the penalty spot, and neither one of them nowhere to be found. How that is acceptable to a head coach of any team, whatever about Major League Soccer, any team, your two central midfielders can't mark players in highly threatening areas. That's not acceptable. From 9v9 all the way up to the highest levels of the game. But yet we watch this stuff happen over and over and over and over and over.
Just to touch on the Buck point, do you think Buck is someone that would perform better than those two, or do you think this is a system problem?
I mean, it must be a system problem because Polster, when he played better, you know, whenever that was, he, you know, his issue before was he would actually be in a good defensive position. He would be between the goal and the ball, but then he would get beat too easily and just like clamor into the guy, knock him to the ground and pull his shirt, take a yell, throw his hands in the air and, you know, throw a little fit for himself. Now he's not even, he actually hasn't gotten up to 5 yellow cards yet because he's not even in the position to get beat to foul the guy. He's just nowhere, as is K. So this is a system problem. You know, for all the very carefully crafted positional play that Porter talks about, it's like watching a 5-out on basketball. They just clear out the midfield and make a giant circle. you know, positional play is it's a defensive thing as well. There is positional aspects to defending, and then these two, and Harkes hasn't been great when he was in there. Buck wasn't great when he was in there. Like it is what they're being asked to do. They're being asked to do the wrong things. And they're, you know, for Polster in particular, there's no consequence because he plays every single week. So, how many you could play all four of them? The way that they defend, you could play a quadruple six, and they still wouldn't be able to defend.
Yeah, so I think I'll kind of preface this by saying, but you know, I'm not quite on the same fully on the same page as you with the distaste for Polster in general. I actually think that these are good players, and I do feel like that there is something either in the system or in the locker room that is failing to get what I think is even baseline from a lot of the players. But I also think the same way we were talking about, you know, if you're going to keep rolling out Vrionings and expecting different results, you can't keep rolling out Polster K and expect different results, right? We've seen it week in and week out. There's mistakes that happen in the midfield. So at a certain point, what does Buck have to do? He's gotten called up by the England youth. I don't know, the elite. I can't keep track of the name changes here for their youth.
It's some stupid name now. The elite squad. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. but he's getting called up there. So, and I think he's probably right too, based upon some of the, some of his performances last year. And he hasn't gotten a chance this year. And honestly, I don't, if in this system, if he had gotten the chance, I'm not sure how much developing he would really be doing. But
God, no.
He's
probably better off.
You can't keep, rolling out the same thing and expecting different results. And that's the world I feel like the refs are in right now.
Yeah, I mean, him and Esmer last night watching them warm up before the game. And my wife and I are like, these two are probably just looking at you like, I can't wait. I can't wait till July 1st. I'm going to tell my agent or agency or parents or whoever, the first offer that comes, yep, sure, no problem. Where is it? Oh, it's a second division team in Siberia. Yeah, no problem. I'm out. Yep, I'll go. And look, on a more serious note, I don't think Buck is – I don't think his skill set fits as a deep midfielder. However, I know what Porter's talking about here, Porter on Twitter, the 6'8". What he's trying to say here is like a single pivot with two center mids in front as opposed to a double pivot with just Carles in front. If they had someone capable, like a Keaton Parks, of playing that single pivot role, then – you could have Carles and Buck playing alongside each other in front of that single pivot. Buck, I think, does his best work in and around the penalty area, which is what we saw last season, cutting in, shooting on his left foot. He's a decent dribbler if he's got some space. Like, he could definitely be like a second runner into the penalty area. He's a real threatening player in the attacking third. But playing as a defensive mid, you're not going to get in those positions that much. So, yeah, I think if they could find a player that could play the single pivot role, which I don't think any of these guys can, then you could have Buck further forward. And then I think he could be effective.
All right. I think that I agree with all that. I would love to see him play. I'd love to see him play a little more, and I'd love to see him play in positions that are better suited for his so we have a bunch more. We have a few more questions here. I'll try and hit some of these more rapid fire because I tried to put ones towards the end that I think would be better for more rapid fire. But one from Dave Reagan on Twitter that says, "Do you think Carles regrets signing that contract extension?" I don't know about that because money's money, right? But I don't think he's happy with the results. My impression from what I have heard about Carles Hill from his interviews and from what other reporters have said is he doesn't like losing, and fair enough. I think a lot of people don't like losing. So he's probably not particularly pleased on being on a team that's lost 10 of 13. A question here from Mike D on Twitter. When does the pain stop? I feel like that is a more generalized question to a lot of the stuff we've already kind of talked about. And my answer is, I don't know. I would love it for it to be soon, but I don't have any, I have no faith currently that big changes are coming that are going to turn things around. Okay, we have one more here from Mike from New Hampshire that says, are we the only team in the league that refuses to make a sub before the 80th minute? So we can dig a little bit on this one. I will point out that the Revs did have to make a sub in the 10th minute, so that is technically before the 80th minute, but that was to replace an injured Tomáš Onkalai. But anything on the substitution patterns?
Well, I mean, the thing is that he used all three substitution windows, so he actually had two further changes that he, you know, he could have subbed out two more players, but he ran out of windows in which to do so. So that's not, I don't really feel like that's great game management. Like, you know, going in at halftime, okay, I've already used one substitution window because of an injury. I've only got two left. So you really need to consider at that point that when you make the last change, you're making multiple changes, right? You're kind of rolling all the dice that you have to roll. And obviously, you know, you didn't even do that. I mean, New York City, you know, they changed out two players. I think it was like around the 65th minute, you know, still 0-0 game, but you know, Nick Cushing wasn't, you know, he wasn't content to just sit there and let the game continue as it had been. So he made two changes to try and change things up. And I think that's about the time. Once you get past the hour mark, the 65th, 70th minute, I think at that point, if things aren't going the way you want them to go, that's when you need to make changes. It takes guys, you know, 5 minutes or so to get into the game. So if you bring them on the 65th minute, they get into the flow of the game by the 70th minute, and you're giving them 20, you know, 25 minutes of stoppage time, maybe, you know, you're giving them enough time to actually kind of try and make something happen. I think he waited a little too long, and he didn't even, again, why didn't he bring Buck and Harkes on? No reason. No one out there was doing anything enough to think that Harkes and Buck shouldn't have gotten a 20-minute run out.
Sure. Yep. So, you know, we know from some comments that Porter made during a press conference recently, or it may have been that 98.5 interview, that he's looking for more, you know, to keep his lineups more consistent. You know, I sort of think that there's this element of him thinking he has thrown kind of everything against the wall and nothing's sticking. And so maybe, you know, keeping the players on the field consistent and trying to build cohesion that way is the strategy. I don't know that necessarily applies throughout the course of the game, but that would be a reason why a lot of the lineups are starting to look, you know, similar, and you know, maybe he hasn't quite made the swaps that he needs to before the games. In terms of during the games, you know, this last game is kind of a tough one to pinpoint exactly, but you know, he to his credit, he has been somewhat limited by the injuries that this squad has had throughout the course of the year. But I there's strong arguments to be made that some changes probably could have come earlier, and you know, that may have changed things, but I don't know, everything's such a mess, like
he's talking about lineup consistency. It's like, but there's no reason to keep being this consistent because the results aren't coming.
Right. Yeah. Consistency isn't going to positively change things in enough of a way that you're not going to continue losing. But, right. So we have a few more last couple questions. So we have one on Threads from Anthro Metropolis again, wondering, absent promotion relegation, how can the league increase the stakes for teams/owners and what might that look like? I'm firmly not on team pro rel. I know there's plenty of U.S. soccer folks that are for promotion relegation. That hasn't been my position, but it does leave a position where teams like the Revs, who are in last place with owners that, you know, maybe care, maybe don't care as much as they should. It does not incentivize them to try to make things better. And so in terms of that, I don't know what they can do or what the league can do to incentivize teams at the bottom to try and improve. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts, Tom?
I'm not a pro promotion relegation advocate either. There's just as many drawbacks as there are benefits, and first of all, I don't have the energy to get into that debate because it's people are either clearly on one side or clearly on the other, and no one changes anyone's mind. And it's just like talking about politics. It's like, what is the point? Right. But look, I don't know. I mean, what incentivizes owners? Money. That's it. That's the only thing. I don't know what the prize money is for like place finishes, but if you started to crank that up so that, you know, even finishing ninth means you get, you know, $3 million in prize money. If you finish in 10th outside the playoffs, you know, you get $2 million. It's like, okay, hey, look, guys, like we really need to make a push here to make the playoffs, because if we can just squeeze ourselves in, you know, I get a million more. The ownership group gets another $1 million. And not crypto, like not MLS crypto, like Tam Gam, not like actual, like, you know, money. That might motivate these guys. But on the other hand, you know, home playoff, you know, if you get in the playoffs, you're guaranteed a home playoff game, which the owners asked for. The owners, according to, I can't remember his name, the guy on 98.5, Jason, anyway, I can't remember his name. He said that, you know, basically the owners came to MLS and said, you know, we want every team to have a guaranteed home playoff game because we want more money, basically. And they agreed to it. So that's another thing. I mean, if you make the playoffs, you get a home game and you make money from home games. So I think that might be one mechanism that they could do, just straight up prize money. The higher you finish, the more money you get.
Yeah. No, and I think that's the only way to do it. Right. Cause you can stipulate that, you know, there's, you know, a financial penalty for finishing in last place to make that, you know, teams incentivized to try to avoid that. But that would involve the owners voting against their own pocketbooks, and that's not really something that they're likely to do.
But they'll always take more.
they will happily take more. That is true. Okay, last couple questions here. Last one about the game is, was Porter's game plan of attack just to play kickball? I think we both kind of agree that there's not enough, you know, there's not enough connectivity between, you know, the midfield surrounding the penalty area and actually getting the ball into dangerous spots. That's, I've mentioned this before, that is not a bug of the Caleb Porter system. That is a feature. He has traditionally emphasized playing with the ball, possession, and at times to the detriment of actually making smart direct attacking play. And then we have, I'm sorry, that was, before I forget, that was another email question. That was from Owen Gio on an email. So you can send us emails. We'll take them and we'll read them on the show. And then the last one here, this is from Mike from New Hampshire. It says, what took you so long to hire Tom, the Dave Romney of podcasters? So I will say that I was not involved in that hiring decision. Actually, I think Tom was I think maybe you officially accepted before I did, but we were hired on at the same time. But I don't think there's any doubts that we are lucky to have the Dave Romney of podcasters on the team. I will not be accepting any questions about that.
Yeah. I've gotten a lot of very positive feedback so far, which I do really appreciate. To be honest, the Revolution Recap front office, they struck very early. I spent the previous 12 years trying to contribute to people's enjoyment of soccer by coaching it. And that I had a couple of very frustrating years at the last club and the last school that I worked at. And I decided that I wanted to take a break from coaching that is seemingly drifting towards a permanent break from coaching. But I still wanted to try and, you know, contribute to people's enjoyment of soccer in a different way. So this has been a lot of fun. Despite all the losing, and I do appreciate all the positive feedback, and that's all I'm trying to do, is just try and find some way to help other people enjoy soccer as much as I do, even when it's as painful as it is following this team this year.
Well, Tom, we're glad to have you. I'm glad to be able to have you on as a guest today. So thank you for coming on. Do you have any final thoughts, and do you have anything in the works for the Blazing Musket, and where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter. I can't even remember my own name. Team Pinzone 343. If this season continues to be the dumpster fire that it is, at some point I will explain my infatuation with the 3-4-3 formation and my attempts to 13 years ago get a middle school boys team to play actually a 2-6-2 that was a 3-4-3 defensively, and how that didn't quite work out. I don't know. I'll write something for the Blazing Musket this week. I don't really know what I want to write about yet. I was going to write an article last week and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. It's too much pain. I don't want to be, I don't want to get pigeonholed as always being pessimistic, but it's really hard not to.
To do that in time.
Yeah, but I don't know. If I do anything this week, I think I might have a go at pointing out the Revs' defensive shortcomings, because that won't be a very difficult picture to paint. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, we'll keep an eye open for that. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter /BlueSky/Threads at AndyRevsNation. I'm keeping the Revs Nation Twitter handle.
Oh, you're taking the title with you.
Taking it with me. I feel like Revs Nation is a little more broad than just the website I used to write for, but you can also keep your eyes open for some content on the Blazing Musket. I will have something up in the near-ish future, so keep your eyes open there. In terms of the podcast, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Revolution Recap. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And be sure to check out our friends at the Blazing Musket. Thanks again for listening to Revolution Recap, presented by Bet Online, and we'll be back next week with another podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand, and he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.